This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the August 10th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. Of course, as you know, this is an open conversation about money, your money. Low interest rates have forced investors to look at putting money at risk. We know that. We've seen how the market's moved up. To have the opportunity to see some real growth, they've been trying. You can't get it out of CDs. It haven't been for years, right? We know that. Saving money is just not working. So maybe I can help you with the possible choices. I tried to, I've been suggesting that the market is really making me nervous. But I don't know when it will fall. I mean, today's a pretty big down day, but that doesn't mean it will be like that tomorrow. I don't know. One day, 2 days doesn't make a trend. But I want to help any way I can. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. You can call our 24-hour listener line anytime you want, 888-99-CHART. You can call right now. We're live. But when we're not live, you can call and leave your questions there. And we'll get to that in a minute. With equity indexes at all-time highs, global mutual funds and ETFs investors may be choosing now as the time to reverse a long-running move into bonds and out of equities. Are global investors sending us a signal? That's our main talking point today. I also want to talk about the NAFTA renegotiations. Some interesting facts. I don't know how that's going to work out, but I'm going to give you some interesting facts. I want to talk about the Tesla bond offering they're making for $1.5 billion. $1.5 billion. And I never got a chance to, but I still want to talk about Jovo when he's hit record high in July. And finally, I want to talk about the scariest chart in the financial markets. This is something I read on the website somewhere. I think it was MarketWatch. And the chart, I printed the chart, and boy, it is kind of very scary, kind of unusual. And it has more to do with European stuff than here in the U.S. Anyway, those are the kinds of things I want to talk about. But, of course, you come first. Let's check in with our 24-hour listener line calls. It's open for your questions anytime you want to ask them.
Hi, Steve. This is Richard from Connecticut. I have a tax question, and it's more about the wash sale. Can we buy a stock that we already own and sell those shares of the stock at the same time and take the tax loss? I was wondering about that, especially with Teva. If we like the company and we like to keep the stock, but we want to take advantage of the tax loss, is that a way to do this, or do we have to take a sale and hold the stock and not hold the stock for 30 days? Thank you.
Of course, I'm not a tax expert, but the rule, the wash rule as he's talking about, is normally if you have a stock with a loss and you want to sell it to realize a loss to apply to realize gains, you can sell it, but then you're going to wait 31 days to buy it back. He's talking about, well, what if I double up on it and then sell the first shares? You can do that, but I believe, because I haven't done it for years and I haven't really looked at that, but I believe you still have to wait 30 days to sell. So you got to go 30 days owning double more than you want. I think that's the rule before you can sell the first group to take the loss. So you still got the 30-day issue. So, depends on what you want to do. I've always sold the originals and waited the 31 days. I've always figured that there's not much going to happen in 31 days that I can't wait. But, yeah, you can do that. I'm just not positive because I haven't done it in so many years. I want to make sure that the rules are still the same. And that's why we have accountants, by the way. Tax losses and those things are there at Bailiwick. But at the end of the year, I've never done it in years, as I said, so I've always done it the other way. Now, to be a responsible investor, to protect your retirement, you have to learn how to be defensive. Yesterday, we talked a little about hedging. There are many types of hedges. You can buy something that tends to move in the opposite direction of the holdings in your portfolio. An example would be owning stocks that you want to hedge against in case they fall, but you do not want to short them. There are borrowing costs of shorting, as you know. You can buy commodities that do not necessarily move with the stock market. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Gold is a perfect example. You can enter positions on interest rate direction that move independently from stocks. That's a type of hedge. Sometimes they move in the same direction, though, too, so it's not always true. If you want to make sure something is going to move the opposite direction of your holdings, you have to short your specific holdings. But you can't do that in an IRA. You can offset it by shorting the index or several indexes with using an ETF. There's ETFs that actually short, so you can buy those in an IRA. There's ways to do it. Do you got more questions about hedging? I'm ready to help in any way I can. 888-99-CHART. Let's get back to the phones and take another question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Jacob from Maryland. I had a question regarding International Business Machines, ticker symbol IBM. I was wondering what you all think about it. Thank you for the show. I'll be listening on it on the next episode. Thank you.
What's interesting about IBM is over the years they have been able to adjust to the massive changes in technology and computer systems and software and servicing. They've been very good about adapting over the years. So you got to give them credit for that. I don't care if you like them, don't like them. You got to give them credit for that. IBM, of course, provides IT consulting services. Notice that's what they say about the company first. It used to be Big Iron. They produce big, huge computers. That was their main business. Now, their main business is IT consulting services, computer hardware and software for institutions worldwide. They're going to make $13.74 this year. That's 1% more than last year, and they're going to grow another 1% next year. So there's not much growth there in earnings. Sales have been shrinking 1 to 5% per quarter for quite some time. So that's why it's a pretty inexpensive stock. They're going to make $13.82 in 2018, and it's a $141 stock, so you're right at, what, 11 PE, which is not high. But we got to remember, it's five-year range is 8 to 14, and 11 is right in the middle. So it's not like, oh, it's a great bargain. Return equity is very good at 80. It's a really solid company, everybody. It's solid. Pays a 4.2% dividend. I'll tell you this, it's a big company, $132 billion. It's probably not for me. It's not cheap enough. You know, if it gets down to 7 or 8 PE at its low range, then I would be much more interested in it, because then that means that dividend, instead of being 4.2, would probably be close to 5. And, you know, I think that would be, but then I'm buying it just for the dividend. That's what I would buy it for. And they have quite a bit of debt, and that kind of concerns me. I want to know why they have that debt, what they're doing about it. Debt is a killer sometimes. As we've seen with Teva Pharmaceuticals, debt killed it because they cut their dividend by 75% and said they're going to use that money to pay debt. So debt is always an issue. Got to watch. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. What happened to the market today? Well, it fell pretty darn hard. You know, it was down on the Dow 204 points, NASDAQ 135, and the S&P was down 35. And remember, I've been reporting on stocks. How many stocks are up on volume, high volume, and how many stocks were down on high volume. And I've been pointing out the last 3 or 4 days that there's a lot of high value, a lot more stocks down on high volume than up on high volume. And today, stocks up on high volume were 16 of them. Stocks down on high volume is 772 today. Remember, yesterday it was 313, so doubled. And that's got to flip around if the market's going to be gain any traction. It's got to flip around. You got to have stocks moving up on volume. They're more positive than there's been for some time now, a lot more stocks moving down on high volume than stocks moving up on high volume. Volume is all about how excited or how depressed people are about the company. right? I'm always trying to, I want to buy more Tesla. Everybody wants to buy Tesla. That's exciting. It's, you know, even though I think it's way overpriced. But, you know, the excitement is there. Therefore, volume is there pushing it up. Then if the same thing happens when everybody's nervous and, oh, I got to get out of this. It's terrible. I don't like it. And then when you have a lot more companies high volume down, that's pretty important versus high volume up. And remember, this is in the face of the Dow and S&P making new highs in recent weeks. Did you know that the small cap index have actually lost money this year? That index is down for the year. Pretty unusual stuff. This is InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley. Asking questions is the best way to learn. And we're open to beginner questions, advanced questions. You know, if I can't answer the advanced questions, I'll let you know. But don't hold back. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me directly at 4 to 5 Pacific time right now, Monday through Friday on InvestTalk. 888-992-4278. Love to talk to you. Well, we had a pretty bad day today. The market really gave up some pretty big ground. And I'm always looking to see if, you know, this is a follow-through down day from yesterday. Now, it might be, remember, it's all about North Korea. But I sit back and I think about it and say, is that just an excuse? Now, 204 points is, you know, it's not that big of a fall, really. I mean, it's 1%. 1%. And, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 1% move in a day was common. Now we look at that as, oh, that's a lot. And it's not really. Not really. Anyway, global investing turns to stocks. Can he bet, or is the market at a top? So global investors are turning away from bonds and investing in more stocks, equities coming into the, you know, more money coming into the equity mutual funds globally in the EU and, you know, emerging markets all over. And then the question are these people late to the party, or are we looking at someone who knows that the end of QE in Europe is ending, and look what our markets did when the end of the QE happened. And my assets got stronger. So are they astute investors, or is this a sign of a market top? And you know what? That's the quandary we're all in, and we always are in. I can find experts to say, yeah, that means that the smart money is getting out, and then they're selling to the individual investors. My personal opinion is, I see an individual investors, I tend to think that they are just as smart as the smart money. I see some dumb moves by smart money managers. So I don't buy that. I think what we're seeing is, it may be people are having a heck of a time finding value in the United States, and they're seeing value in other parts of the world. I think that's a smart thing. I do. Anyways, this is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. Asking questions is the best way to learn, of course. We're open to beginner questions as well as advanced, as you know. No question is too simple, but there are questions too hard for me. I'll guarantee you that. But don't hold back. 888-99-CHART is how to reach me directly, 4 to 5 Pacific time on InvestTalk. We're going to talk to John in Mountain View. How are you doing, John?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had a question for you. I have a long-term position in Apple.
So do I.
And yeah, that's what I've heard. That's encouraging. I think what I'm wondering is, do you think it would be premature to, if there's another drop like today or maybe a couple of days and Apple's in the 140s, do you think adding to a position at that level for something long-term? I think that I personally am thinking the next year is going to be great at least. I don't know what your thoughts were or what you would do in that sense.
Well, let me ask you a question, John. Is the Apple position you have a 3%, 5% of your portfolio overall? How much is it of your portfolio? Because you don't
I
want
would say it,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't have any problem with having a pretty good sized position at Apple, but it's never smart to have too much. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say it's probably just over 2%, but
you can double it.
Double it?
Yes, but wait. Let's wait for a pullback. You're going to get that pullback. I think you're going to get it to about maybe the mid 140s. If the market pulls back, it's going to pull Apple down with it. Apple's a great company. Everybody knows all about Apple. And it's not as expensive as a lot of other tech companies for how much money it is, how big it is, and all those things. But it is at the high of its five-year P.E. range, 10 to 18. It's right at 18. But they're going to make 9% more this year, another 20% earnings more next year. So by that time, it's going to be a 15 P.E. if the stock does not move. So I think long-term prospects for Apple are pretty good. And I like the AI part of what's going on in Apple. AI, artificial intelligence. I really like that.
Yeah. Do you think, though, it just seems like you said, the pipeline seems like it's really rounding out nice going forward, but do you think I'd be better off even if, you know, the position I have is pretty much averaged out mostly in the 90s, the low to high 90s.
Yeah.
But should I wait till it, at first I thought 125. I mean, I don't want to wait.
I don't think it's going down that far.
You don't think so? Okay.
I think the 140s, it could get into the 30s, but it would surprise me because, remember, we're coming up on the next phone cycle for Apple, right? If the market collapsed, Apple could get down to below 100, you know, if the market collapsed. If it did that, John, I'd be buying a lot more Apple.
Yeah. you and me both.
Yeah. Okay, John, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. NAFTA renegotiations. Do you know that's starting up? That Trump's renegotiating with NAFTA is starting up? And the big issue is not, you know, NAFTA is both Canada and Mexico free trade. No one talking about Canada. No one cares about Canada because we have a huge trade deficit with Mexico. Okay, it's huge. It's the total trade deficit is $64.4 billion. Now, this is the problem. This is why this renegotiation is going to be very difficult. We have a trade deficit of $64.4 billion last year. Now, if you take out transportation, we had a trade surplus. Now, what is transportation? Transportation is all about automobiles. $45 billion in cars and $26 billion in parts, car parts. So you have manufactured cars down there that are shipped up here and parts down there shipped up here. And without that one piece of business, cars, we'd have a surplus with Mexico. So how are you going to negotiate that trade deficit away? How? You can tell the car plants that makes cars to move to up here? Probably not going to be able to do that. Remember, these are all kinds of car makers. How are you going to do that? You can maybe able over time to persuade them, like Trump has been doing, to build new factories here when they need them. That might help. That's not going to help Mexico, but that'll help the trade deficit. It's all about autos on this new NAFTA renegotiations, and I'm just not sure I can see how this is going to work. How's it going to work? I mean, how are you going to fix that? I mean, I guess you could say, well, we need to sell them more stuff from us. Okay. What can they really afford to buy from us? I mean, I guess you could focus on that part of this new negotiations. Try to get them to open up more markets. But the whole NAFTA deal is, you know, the market's already open. I'm not sure how this is going to work. It's going to be interesting to see what they come up with and see if it really is going to work. Okay, everybody, we're at the halfway mark. Plenty of time to get your questions into the program. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and their new Disciplined Equity Program. This is an addition to KPP's select investment programs, and it raises expectations. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing on only high-quality companies. And although the portfolio is concentrated, it limits exposure to any one sector of the market. Check it out if you're interested. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com or click on Contact Steve and he'll gladly fill you in about it. As with all of KPP's programs, a KPP Financial principal is personally invested right alongside their clients. This is parallel investing and it's your assurance of optimum care and diligence. The new Disciplined Equity Program from KPP Financial. Now let's get back to the podcast. We're glad you're here for Invest Talk as we continue now. Financial advisor Steve Peasley is ready for your money question. Maybe it's about annuities. Are there good reasons to consider one? Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. Let's talk to Ben in San Jose. How you doing, Ben?
Good afternoon, Steve. I want to let you know I really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
I think it's fantastic for anybody to listen and learn.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding Biocep and KTOS. This is a true stock I've been watching, and I was wondering where is the best entry time for these two stocks.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
I'm pretty far from Mike, sorry. I put in KTOS, Kratos Defense, and out of San Diego, provides weapons systems testing and command control, communications, computing, public safety, and security services. It's a billion-dollar company, so it's small. They're going to make 10 cents this year after losing money the last couple of years, and then they're going to make 34 cents next year. So, of course, the stock has moved up with that anticipation in mind. And sales have been picking up the last two quarters by 10% each. Before that, they were growing, but small. So they've just recently, in the recent 6 months or so, their prospects have picked up. And, of course, the stock moved from $3 a share to $12 a share. And I'm telling you, don't chase this. You don't want to chase it because it will probably pull back down today, 2% today. And it looks like a lot of overhead resistance, right around $12.70 or so. So I think you want to wait. If it pulls back to like, I don't know, $8.75 to $9, then that would be a much better buy point.
Thank you.
So I'd probably wait and just, because the market's not acting very good right now, Ben. So let's kind of just be patient with that money. Don't be anxious to get that money into the market right now.
Okay. That makes sense.
Appreciate the call, Ben. Thank you very much. Let's get back to our 24-hour listen line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hey, Stephen, Justin. This is Owen calling in from Massachusetts with a question about New York Community Bank, NYCB. I have a small position in this stock currently, and I'm down a little under 2.5%. I was wondering if you think now would be a good time to add a little bit more to this, or if you have any thoughts in general on bank stocks at the moment. I'd be happy to hear sort of any of your thoughts on that. Thanks so much.
Okay, I'd say no. NYCB, New York Community Bank Corporation, holding company for New York Community Bank and New York Commercial Bank, operating 255 offices in New York, New Jersey, Florida, Ohio, and Arizona. The reason why I'm saying no is not because I don't like banks. It's because I think we just got to be careful with the market. And this particular bank has been falling from $16.50 down to $12 since the beginning of the year, consistently down, and has broken to new lows today. So don't buy more. Not yet. Long as the fundamentals of the company are okay, not great. Why? Well, because their sales have been falling the last three quarters. Now, they only fell 2% the most recent quarter. The quarter before that was 6%. The quarter before that was 7%. The sales are falling. I'm very nervous about a company whose sales are shrinking. Their earnings are going to be 83 cents this year after $1.01 last year, and then only recover to 87 cents next year. So it's a $12 stock with 87 cents. That means that it's not overly expensive, but it's not cheap. You buy this for the dividend, 5.5%. And I will say this for on a positive note, last year there was a lot of insiders buying between $14 and $15 a share. A lot. This year there's no one buying as the stock has fallen. No insiders buying. Why not? If they were willing to buy at $14, $15, why won't they want to buy it at $12? Why not? If you thought it was a bargain at $14.50, if you thought it was a bargain then, why aren't you buying more now when it's $12.31 or $12, $13? See, that's telling to me. Management owns 3% of the company. Anyway, so I would not buy more. You want to at least wait till it turns sideways on you. That's NYCB Bank. David, New Hampshire. How you doing, David?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for making it.
So I am looking for a breadbasket commodity ETF, and I came across ETFS Bloomberg All Commodity. The ticker is BCI.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was started pretty recently. Started this year, and I looked at the holdings, and it looks like most of the holdings are in U.S. Treasury bills and not commodity-related investments.
Really?
So I was wondering if you could explain that to me.
That is pretty interesting because it's described, this is an ETF, exchange-traded fund. Exchange-traded fund seeks to provide a total return performance corresponding to the Bloomberg Commodities Index. So therefore, it's supposed to be in commodities, in commodities, wherever the index owns or tracks is what this is supposed to own or track. I would definitely get a copy of the prospectus and read it. You said that one of the reasons could be it's pretty new, and they just haven't got around to investing the money. I mean, we're talking
so they're
about
just collecting assets at this point, and they may get into buying equities soon or whatever they buy.
Yeah, they might be buying all along, but they're buying slowly and more money is pouring in than they're putting to work. Because we're talking something that just came out a few months ago.
Right. Know?
So that could be the reason. And it could be because they're trying to hedge themselves, knowing full well that commodities are not in favor right now. So they're being really slow about it. But they're supposed to track the index. So, I would take a look at their perspectives. Maybe they give themselves, a window on the IPO of this thing to give themselves time. But they're going to be following the index. That's their job.
Right.
That's the description.
Okay.
That's the only excuse.
Should I be concerned getting in on an ETF that's just 3 or 4 months old?
Yeah, I try not to do it myself. I try to stay away from these brand new ETFs because the problem you've noted yourself. They don't have the track record yet to see how they're doing. I've seen ETFs say that they're going to do XYZ and then fail to be able to do it. So I think I'd give it a little time. I'd give it at least 6 months before I'd be interested in getting into it.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Thank you, David. BCI is the symbol. Yeah, it's an ETF following commodities. I mean, you can almost do anything with ETFs these days. I mean, you as an investor, you can buy almost any kind of asset out there, which didn't used to be available to people. Never was. Tesla. Tesla has announced they're going to issue bonds of $1.5 billion in bonds. So they're going to make themselves more in debt, and they're supposed to use this money so they can bolster their balance sheet and use it to roll out their Model 3 car, which is the $35,000 electric car for the common man instead of the more expensive one. Now, their goal, according to Musk, he's expecting to produce 10,000 cars a week by the end of 2018. Most of the experts don't think he can do it. Because think about how many cars. That's 520,000 cars in a year. They think that the more realistic, maybe 350,000 cars. And just to give you an idea, in 2016, Tesla produced 85,000 cars. So they're going to go to 85,000. Tesla thinks they're going to ramp that up to 500,000. That's going to be difficult. They're going to remain cash flow negative into 2019. So, you know, you hear about all the cars they're selling and people waiting in lines and want to buy their cars, but they can't produce enough, and it's really expensive to come out with a new model. And they're putting themselves more and more in debt. And I don't think they're going to lose money this year. They lost money last year. They're going to lose $6.29 this year per share. Next year, they're going to lose 43 cents because their sales are ramping up. So it's a race. Money in from selling the cars, cost to produce the cars. And, you know, I think Tesla is going to be a big car company. I really do, because I think Musk is really smart. And I think that, but my issue has always been and will continue to be, how much debt is he going to take on to get there? And remember, GM is still around, but they went out of business and all the stockholders lost every dime in the financial crisis. GM was around for years and years. Tesla could take on so much debt that they're bankrupt. And they file bankruptcy and come out with a new offering for Tesla, and all the stockholders that are in it now could get zip. I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm saying you got to watch the debt. How much more debt is he going to put on? Is the $1.5 billion enough? Is he going to come back into it and take on more debt? I think he's going to have to. That could be an issue. What does an InvestTalk insider know that you don't? Maybe something she saw or he saw on one of the dozen or more webinars, or the easy-to-read info sheets written by myself or Justin. Why not give yourself the insider advantage? Sign up yourself on InvestTalk.com. It's free. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
The best investing approach is one that combines disciplined fundamental analysis with a market perspective and an understanding of human psychology. Do you have questions about portfolio management? We'd love to hear from you. 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Lucy. How you doing, Lucy?
Couldn't be better, Steve.
Good.
How about you?
Well, I could be better. I it's been a tough go this week with the market, but, you know, that's part of the core, right? That's what so happens.
Absolutely. Well, I'm looking for some advice about a fund, Odyssey Fund.
Okay.
Okay. It's supposed to be very good but expensive, and the symbol is POGRX.
Okay. Do you own it or do you want to buy it?
Want to buy it.
Okay. Okay, let's look at it. It is on Morningstar. It's a 4-star fund, and they run from 1 to 5 stars, 5 being the best, 1 being the worst. So they're a 4-star fund. They have about $9 billion in assets. What do they do? They are listed as a medium to large growth investing company. Their biggest holdings, for instance, are Seattle Genetics, American Airlines, Eli Lilly, Amgen. What do they have? Let's see. They're 82 or 83% of their investments are in stock, U.S. stock, 13% in non-U.S. stock. So that they are a pretty good fund family. their strength is in healthcare and technology. That's where much of their money is, in those two areas. Okay, so it is a good fund. It's been a long-term good fund. And I think their category is large growth, even though they don't have all large growth. It's more medium to large growth from what I can see. Okay? So,
yeah, well, they closed.
Go ahead.
They closed one fund. Well, would you, I'm thinking about just S&P 500 or this fund, because I don't know. It said that it costs like 0.63. Is that expensive?
It's 0.66, and probably, no, that's pretty reasonable. Anything under 1%. Is pretty reasonable. If you do an S&P 500, it'd be less costly, especially if you did Vanguard. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, this is a different kind of fund, and you know, their fee is below average. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, thank you for the call. Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you, Lucy. Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm well. Good evening. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
I wanted to maybe revisit like where we stand presently with gold, and particularly the Elliott Wave notion of gold. I know about a year ago I was listening. We were talking about how gold will increase, go up and down in various waves.
Yeah.
And last year could have been very much represented the first wave.
Right.
And then we had a pullback, and I don't know that a second wave has happened yet. Has too much time passed for a new rise in gold to be considered as a second wave in the series, or would it be a start of a new increase in gold? And not to get ahead of myself, but in the case of GDX, do you think in the next year that could be in the $40 plus range?
Which one was it, GLD or GDX?
GDX.
Okay. GDX, everybody, is the gold miners ETF. I would say, you know, we have had that big wave last year come in, and I'm thinking,
yes.
The Elliott Wave, everybody, is a technical look at the chart. And Elliott Wave, the theories are different. The stock prices go in waves, and there's, I think, five waves for a primary move or something like that. And I think you're going to be looking at another primary move. That's what I think, James. I think that the last one, you had a bunch of smaller waves that have gotten smaller, smaller, and smaller, the five, and I think that you're going to wait for the next primary move. This is Invest Talk, everybody. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Ivan in Colorado. How you doing, Ivan?
I'm doing pretty good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I had a question about NVIDIA today, ticker symbol NVDA.
Yes.
I was looking at that after-hours dump. I was just wondering what's going on after that quarter two.
You know, the investors or after-hours were not impressed with the numbers, even though they met expectations, you know, that the Wall Street expected. They met them. And I was looking at the news and looking at the numbers and listening to the announcement, and I can't figure out why it would tumble at all. I like NVIDIA. I don't own any of it. Designs graphic processing units used in personal computers, workstations, game consoles, and mobile devices. But what it leaves out, what they do, is you do know that NVIDIA chips are in Tesla. They're gonna be very much in the self-driving automobiles. NVIDIA is very much into artificial intelligence. You know, they grew their sales 56%, and they've been growing 50% for the last year every quarter, 50% growth every quarter. So I'm not sure why, Ivan. To be honest, if the talk rolls over and comes down somewhat, I'm going to be a buyer. This is why I'm not a buyer right now. Well, their PE is pretty high. You know, it's been marching up pretty good. I mean, it moved from a year ago $60 to now $164. So now I don't want to be a chaser of this stock. I really would love to see it pulled back down to the $110, $120 area, but I don't think it's going to go there. I think more realistic, maybe it might pull to down to 140 to 150, and maybe I can pick it up there. But I just have a hard time buying it here. It just seems too high.
Okay.
Okay?
Thanks.
Like it. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Noel in Napa. How you doing, Noel?
Oh, I'm doing great. Nice day. I was just a quick question where you thought if SSMI, Merit Medical, what you thought of that one?
SSMI is not coming up on my charts.
SSMI, Merit.
Sam?
Oh, I'm sorry, MMSI, Merit Medical, MMSI.
MMSI. There it is. Yeah, it's MMSI I do have. Okay.
Yeah, MMSI.
Merit Medical Systems. It's a $1.9 billion company. It develops disposable medical devices for use in interventional cardiology and radiology. So it is in the, medical products area. It has $186 million in sales last quarter. It's growing about 20 to 25% the last two quarters. Its growth is speeding up, which is very good. The stock has marched up pretty strongly, however, so everybody knows that already. It's going to make $1.42 next year after making $1.26 per share this year. $1.42 and a $39 stock means that the stock is 30-plus P.E., and its five-year range is 15 to 35. It's kind of expensive, but it deserves to be expensive, Noel. I'm not trying to say it doesn't deserve it, but it is kind of expensive.
Yeah, it is.
So if you get any kind of pullback, that would be very nice. It's pulled back
a couple of dollars here in this current market.
Yeah, pulled back almost 5% today. To the 20-day moving average. And every time it falls between the 20-day moving average and the 30-day moving and the 50-day moving average, which is 38 right now, it has bounced. For almost a year, it bounced up. So it's just made the 20-day moving average, the 50-day moving average is at 38. So I give it a few days, and if it holds, then this might be a good place to buy it.
I was just wondering what would be a comfortable entry point for you.
Probably I would love to pick it up in the low 30s. That would be ideal. 31, 32. Okay? Appreciate it, Noel. Thank you for the call. Time's up for the hour. This next date on my checkup calendar is August 23rd. I'll be in San Jose all day on the 23rd of August. All day. In San Jose. To reserve your hour with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on Portfolio Review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and the whole KPP family, thanks for being with us tonight. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.